Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 152. And it's quite a special one, guys. And I'll get to that in just a second. So we're coming off a great episode. Steven Seagal's from Finland last week. Just a really fun interview. But this week, I want to talk to you about some of the really important sponsors that make this podcast possible. The first one is Manskirt Brewing, located in Hackettstown, New Jersey, right in the old bank building. Just a really cool brewery to go visit. They do a lot of different events. We're actually talking about doing something with them soon. They have eight rotating taps of seasonally inspired ales. Manskirt Brewing, go check it out. Go hang. You could do the whole brewery trip, but make sure you stop at Manskirt. Give them some love on Facebook and Instagram. Demented Brewing. Okay, they're located in Middlesex, New Jersey. So if you're in a different part of the state, why not stop at Demented Brewing? They got one of the coolest tasting rooms, and I think in all of New Jersey, they have like 16 rotating handles. They're always doing something on Sundays and releasing new beers and then special beers on Tuesdays, and they're really just coming up with some creative stuff. This Sunday, they just released Item 9, their Pineapple Session Ale, which sounds amazing. And then the Sunday coming up, they're going to be releasing Bloody Bastard. Bloody Bastard, their Blood Orange IPA. So those sound like two amazing things that I want to try, and you should want to try too. So go head over to Demented Brewing and show them some love. Now, the third brewery that makes this podcast awesome and helps us out is up in Lake George, and that is the Adirondack Brewery, right there on Canada Street, right by the the village of Lake George. It's a beautiful place to go eat and visit. They have tons of events like Oktoberfest and funky ice parties, and they're always doing something unique and original. And you can actually check them out on our podcast a few episodes back, a lot of episodes back at this point. Just go look it up. They are now open 7 days a week with the summer coming. They open at 12 p.m. every day. They get the Americade Bike Rally in town, which sounds like a lot of fun. And new lunch and dinner specials are now available, including apple and Gouda stuffed chicken and the bruschetta flatbed and pear and walnut salad. Oh, yeah. Sounds amazing. And they just finished their cider project. So go give them a like on Facebook and Instagram. Susan Robb, you've heard a lot of people that she works with on this show, including Dave Andrechuk and Paul Templer, and a bunch of interesting people like that. She's out of Toronto, Canada, and lives out her mission to inspire others. Susan is a client partner for the Center for Leadership Studies, original home of situational leadership. CLS is deployed in over 70% of top Fortune 500 companies around the globe. If you want to learn more about how to build your leadership capacity or hire a speaker for an event, contact her at susan.robb@situational.com. Get one of her speakers to come speak. Coach Jim Johnson was a great one. Just a lot of really interesting people. And finally, Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. I host Trivia Wednesdays at Tap House 15 in Jefferson. And it's just a really fun time out. You could be in last place and still win brewery prizes too. Different New Jersey breweries. And it's just a good night out. So look on the website. They have locations all over the state. You can bring in bonus items for different points, and just they're a lot of fun. So go follow them and go have a night out with your friends. That is Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer. Now, this is a very special episode personally for me because I got to interview two members of one of my favorite bands of all time, Coheed and Cambria. Yes, that's correct. Josh Eppard, the drummer, and Travis Stever, the guitar player. We got to do two separate interviews, and very grateful that they gave me some time, and I think it's really generous. They just came off the Never Ender tour. They're heading out to Europe. They gave us just a really really cool interviews from both of them, different perspectives on some of the same things. And go check out Coheed and Cambria if you haven't. They're one of the weirdest, most talented bands out there. You got to check them out. But without further ado, here's episode 152 with the boys from Coheed and Cambria. Enjoy the podcast.
Hey, this is Travis Stever from Coheed and Cambria, and you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Oh, hey, Mike Berlew.
Hello there, Scott.
Good to see you in the middle of the afternoon.
Is it?
God. It's funny because you sound like we're scripted, but we're not scripted, but you're sounding like you're scripted.
I don't know what you're talking about. Please continue.
But anyway, I almost allowed you to have a week off from the podcast, but now, since we had a week and 2 days off, now you have three interviews to record in the next 4 days, or 5 days, so. So, when I think I get out and pull, what's that saying?
Just when I thought I was getting out, they pull me back in. There we go.
He pulls
me right back in.
But it's important. This is special. This is a special thing going on today. Anyway, welcome to episode what will probably be a two-parter. Okay. I'm hopefully saying that because I might get two parts of this guest. Right?
We're 150A, we should end on like a cliffhanger.
158.
Or I thought I said 158.
Oh, 150A.
Yeah.
We did 150. This would be like 151A.
Yeah. Scott, the pregnancy test says you're... Dun, dun, dun!
Berlew, you are not the father. But anyway, it is another rainy, crappy day, because apparently we live in Seattle now, and that's all it does. You get nice one day, 100-degree heat, rain, nice... 100-degree heat, rain. It sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Sucks the life out of me.
Don't like Jersey. Give it 5 minutes.
Yeah, Jersey suddenly turned into like, I feel like whenever it's warm, it's humid as hell now. Oh, like it's not like nice anymore.
Yeah, that 90s. We had a couple days in the 90s, and it was nasty. Like, I've been in way hotter temperatures, and I was still like, God damn. And I was cranking that AC. I couldn't stand it around here.
But anyway, so, on Monday, now, I am a big fan, a big fan for a long time of a band called Coheed and Cambria.
Mm-hmm.
Many people have heard of them. If you don't know the band, they're an amazingly talented band. They have a hard time fitting into a genre because some songs are very like metal and heavy and progressive, and they almost sound like Rush sometimes. But then they have like pop punk songs, and they have weird songs. Like the lead singer Claudio's voice is like very recognizable; it's very, very high. On Monday,
they're multifaceted,
very, very much so. Which I think is a problem they run into, like when they have to be the opening band for like someone, like they don't like quite fit into a genre. You
guys,
know?
We can only perform songs 3, 9, and 14 tonight.
I think we
can get in with Metallica. We do that.
But I've seen the band, like I don't know, at least 10 times along the way. And they're very cool because their lyrics and concepts, all but one album, are all based off a comic book that the lead singer writes.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll have songs that, like, you hear things about robots and aliens, and you're, like, singing along. You're like, did he just, you know, like, say robot? But it's a little strange, but they're very – I've been following them for, I don't know, 15 years, something like that, 12 years.
I guess it's ironic they didn't make the song Kryptonite.
That little beep cannot come at a better time.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but
time.
So this little recent tour they did is something called Never Ender, and basically they did front to back. They've done this a couple times before, but they did front to back their whole Good Apollo album, which is their third album, which is probably their best-selling album, I would assume, as far as, like, the general public.
Right.
So they did. But I wasn't going to go because I've seen them so many times. I'm like, oh, I'll take a break this time I'm around. But the girlfriend, she likes them, and this happens to be, like, the one album she does know. So I'm like, well, let's just get tickets. And I got tickets off StubHub.
And it was going to go off the album.
No! Yeah. But it was, we went, ended up being awesome. It's in my least favorite venue, Terminal 5 in the city, but we don't need to get into that. They just oversell it, like, so there's nowhere to stand. But so, and we'll get to Coheed in a minute. But I go to the concert.
All right.
And we pay for parking. Parking's in
stupidly expensive. Like,
I'm surprised. New York City?
Yeah, yeah.
It's so well known for the cheapness.
It's in that area where it's like all like car dealerships and big Trump buildings. And it's, mm-hmm. I don't even know what that's called, like 50th Street and all that. Alphabet City, I think it is. But anyway, so we pay for parking. Well, we don't pay for it. We go into the parking garage. We're like, oh, it's going to be like $60 or something like that. Expensive. Show goes. We go to the show. We go get something to eat. Great time. Lots of fun. We know we're getting out late. It's a Monday night. It's 11:30. So we start heading back to the parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
Go to the parking lot, and I go to pay, and the guy hands me my keys. And I look at my keys, and the remote's missing. Those are pretty expensive to replace, you mm-hmm. know. So I kindly say, hey, the remote's missing. Can you look around for it? I checked my pockets, thinking like it fell off or whatnot. I'm like, can you look for it? And the guy immediately, like, he's just rude. He's like, oh, no. It's like, not my problem. I'm like, not your problem.
I put your car in an establishment, and yeah. I paid for it. I think it's kind of your problem right now.
So he said, not my problem, like 3 or 4 times. I'm like, bro, these are not like cheap. This is the only one I have, and these are not cheap to replace. And I gave you the keys, meaning it's probably somewhere here. And I'm starting to get heated. Like, he's literally going, not my problem, like making this obnoxious face, like, not my problem, not my problem. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, dude, like, this is ridiculous. And then eventually he, like, turns and starts ignoring me. Like, as I'm talking, like, looking one way, and I'm talking to him. I'm like, this is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. I'm like, can you call the guy before, you know, because it wasn't the same guy that was here before. Maybe he has it in his pocket by accident, you know. So he keeps ignoring me, and now I'm throwing F-bombs around. I'm like, this is, you know, like, I'm heated. It takes a lot for me to get angry.
Yeah.
And he's still ignoring me. So I'm like, you know what? I'm going to call your bluff. And I called the cops. I was like, you know, I'm going to call the cops and see if they'll, you know, maybe he'll start moving and looking for it now. So I call the boys in blue. And they arrive, and they're like,
the most boring episode of SVU ever.
We're missing a key fob. Like,
dun, dun.
There's always going to be the first suspect that it's not him either. So they come, and like right away they're like, not at me, they're like, oh, this guy, like, these lot, I guess that there's a lot of problem, people get into things. And now while that's happening, there's a couple behind me, and they're like being charged with the wrong amount, and they're kind of disputing with this guy too. So obviously this is not a very great business.
Well,
okay, not nice anyway. Yeah. So I call the cops. I'm like, you know what, screw this, I'm gonna stand up for myself for once. Because I'd never, the old Scott or the normal Scott would always be, yeah, just let it go. You know, this sucks. This sucks. You know, put my head down and go, oh, this sucks. I gotta go buy a new key. I'm like, you know what? Enough. Like, I got the speeding ticket I just paid. I'm not paying again for another remote that I didn't lose. Now, I tell the guys, I'm like, guys, this guy's just ignoring me. I said, listen, if it's lost and we look around for it, we can't find, things happen. But, like, can you guys see if he'll look around for it? And they start asking him questions. And they're like, he's kind of like ignoring them and beating around the bush. And they're like, who was the guy before you? He's like, I don't know.
I don't know the guy.
And then they started getting a little pissed. Like, come on, man. Like, they're like asking him for forms to fill out the thing. And they give me these old forms. Like, they're like, well, what do you do if you have a lost property or your car gets hit? Like, what do you guys have a form that you fill out? So eventually they bring it to me, and I'm filling out my information. And so I'm like, guys, honestly, like, what are the chances of me getting this back or anything or money back? And they're like, not much. I'm like, all right, it's fine. It's the principle of it. And they're writing me, like, the precinct number to go call. And I'm like, this is ridiculous. And meanwhile, the whole time I'm thinking, oh, my God, I know the remote's going to be, like, in my pocket or under my seat. But I didn't have my keys, so I knew that it wasn't in my pockets because I left them in the car running, you know, like,
yeah,
when for them to pull it around. So long story short, like, me and the guy, I can't even look at the guy, and I'm walking around. There's spoons that look like they've been used for, like, crack, like smoking crack and stuff like that by my car. And I'm like, you know, look at this place. Like, the cops are looking, and they're questioning him. And eventually we're like, okay. So the cops leave, like, here's what you can do. Give us a call tomorrow. But in my mind, I'm like, I'm not calling anybody tomorrow. Maybe I'll call about this business or something like that. Mm-hmm. So they pull
a sponsor to the podcast.
Ahmed's Parking.
Sick of your property? We'll take care of that for you.
Got a pesky key that you don't like anymore?
Miss the days of smoking crack in a nice spoon?
Here at Ahmed's Parking, we provide the spoon. So
listen, have you seen my crack? I don't know what you're talking about. Haven't seen it.
So the cops drive away, and they're, I can still see them. They're in the corner by like the light, like around the corner. I hop in the car. I'm pissed. Alex sees it. I'm like fuming. She's like, I'm actually proud of you for calling. I'm like, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, yeah, I am. But so as I'm pulling away, Ahmed or whatever the hell his name is comes running up to the car. Hey, guess what I found? He has the freaking remote in his hand. I'm like, you bastard. Like, we just spent about 40 minutes between everything, 45 minutes looking. And you couldn't look. He's like, oh, it was by the keys. I'm like, really? Really? It's by the keys?
I never thought the thing where I put my keys would have something related to the keys.
I was so mad. And, you know, like, I, like, swallowed my tongue. I looked at him, I shook his hand. I said, this is, you know, this is effing ridiculous. I said, it's ridiculous. I said, it's just really poor business, man. And I took the remote. And I'm like, God damn. And I pull around, and the cops are still there. And I roll my window down. I'm like, guess what our buddy found? And they're just like, they're all in there. Because they're there 40 minutes. Like, someone might be getting killed. Someone might be getting raped. Someone, you know, there might be a robbery. They're there looking for my key thing because this guy won't cooperate. And they're like, it's ridiculous. They're like, rip up the report. I'm like, they're like, I'm sorry, you got to deal with that. But it's like, people suck. People just suck. Like, I don't know. Makes you so mad. Like, I hate bad customer service.
I just don't understand what else did he have better to do than like to just look around too. For a couple minutes.
So it was, you know, we both work in the morning, so you add 45 minutes to an already late night traveling back from the city. Like, I don't think I went to bed till 2:30, something like that. I mean, I have my key. It's not, I guess it's a moral victory or something, but really, really frustrating. You know, it reminds me when I sold my house, when I sold my house and going through the divorce, the day before I put the house on the market, this sewer pump in the backyard broke. I don't know if you remember that. I don't recall. It was already a while ago now. But and it was expensive. So, like, that was like,
yeah, there ain't nothing cheap about sewage.
Yeah, that was like the pinnacle because I was getting the house. I spent every day getting the house ready, cleaning, painting, you know, boxing things. And this thing broke the day before. The agent was going to put it up for open houses and stuff. I'm like, Jesus. And there's water and sewage. Like, you know, that's not a great thing to throw up. Like, hey, what's this? And no one's going to buy a house. And they, my dad's there. And eventually, that was like the breakdown point. That was like a mental breakdown for me that day. But I call and we get this company recommended. And it, you know, they come, they do the job, right? So they come and do the job. I'm like, you know, he comes out, he does the job. And the next day, I'm like mowing the lawn. I'm like, oh, let's just check on the pump or whatever. And it's all overflowing and everything. Again, I'm like, what the? And it was like $3,800 or something like that. And money I obviously didn't have at the time to begin with. That I'm still paying for, by the way. But side note. And I call. And, like, I need to speak to someone. Like, the house is supposed to go on the market, like, tomorrow, and this thing's leaking all over the place. And the guy is just so rude on the phone, hangs up on me, like, literally hangs up. I'm like, are you kidding me? And he's, like, cursing at me, and he's telling me that my dad, because my dad called and tried to get some information because he knows more about how to describe something than I do, like, technical-wise.
There's liquidy things coming from the thingamabob that's circular near the vroom 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 vroom.
The flux capacitor is leaking. Like, I don't know what I'm saying. And he told me my dad was lying and stuff. I lost. That's the other time I lost.
I somewhat remember this just by you saying how you said your dad was lying.
I'm like, buddy, what in the world do I have to gain here? I'm like, I just need them to come out and do the work. And eventually they have to come back out and do the work. And I'm like, bad customer service drives me crazy.
I mean, why are they? Are they thinking like you went in there with like a screwdriver and loosened it up? I'm gonna get a free repair by filling my house full of sewage. Yeah, score one for Brennan.
Whoever buys this house is screwed.
Looks like you're up Schitt's Creek.
My bad service drives me crazy. That's like, I owe Easy Pass $100. Okay. At the time, my Easy Pass, my credit card expired, and I guess I went through the thing a few times. And I call up to pay, and they're like, okay, you paid your fines. But apparently, penalties are different. You have a penalty account, and you have a, like a, your account. And they never told me this. So all of a sudden I'm getting these notices. They're like, blah, blah, blah has gone to collection. I'm like, I paid it. I had them switch over the credit. I'm an Easy Pass customer. Don't you just sweat? Like, okay, the balance is covered. Right. Now they want $103 for me in collection. And I refuse. I'm just like, it's like me versus them. Like, I'm just like, no, I'm not paying it. It's not that I don't have it. Well, I barely have it. Yeah. But it's that I don't think I'm a customer. Like, it's, you know. Like,
again, that's the stupidity of it. Hey, you went through and it didn't pay Easy Pass. Well, here's my Easy Pass account. Oh, okay. Nope. Let me just put there. But you know, we had to get people involved, and you know, that costs money, and time's money, and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, like, I should not feel like I'm at the DMV at a parking lot, getting something. I'm paying for your goods and services in a sewer place, Easy Pass. Like, I don't know. The DMV, the only other place I remember being that bad was there was a Verizon in Woodbridge that I used to have to go get, like, stuff for my phone, and that was always hell. Like, me and my buddies used to be like, oh, I got to go to the DMV again. It was, like, the code for Verizon. But, okay, rant over.
All right.
I had to get that off my chest. It was not good.
I wish you kept it in, and as we were doing the interview, it just popped up. Speaking of key fobs, what?
Just ask him only about parking issues.
Like, yeah, we're doing a European tour. Yeah, I'm doing a tour of New York because I can't get my key fob.
But, yeah. And other news, I guess we'll tie it in because we've got a guest in a few minutes, as long as he calls. So I've been, I don't know if you noticed over there, I've been into the records lately. I got a record player, and I've been buying some records, and I don't know, there's something cathartic about putting an album on, like a whole album, rather than listen to a song, you know, like, I don't know if you're, you know, how big of a music guy you are, but there's something about an album rather than playing a hit or a song, like listen to the whole thing again. I think digitally we sometimes miss that now because we just play it, you know, and that's it. We don't hear the first or second. Oh, I like that song. I like how this one goes to that one. Or usually the last song in an album is usually what wraps an album up, you know. So I've been really into the records lately.
All right.
And it's like bringing me back to like some of my favorite albums. Like, and I got a couple on vinyl, and I went through my dad's records upstairs and stuff like that. And I don't know. It's kind of cool. But,
It's very nostalgic to the second you put the needle on there and you hear that little scratch.
That little warm, like,
and
static.
Then the music starts, and it's just a natural, you know, relaxation. Yeah,
it's funny because tapes suck. Like, tapes, you know, like, you have to fast forward to song you can't skip. Records, you could, you know, get to your track, okay? CDs are fine because you can listen to the whole album, play whatever you want, but it seems like tapes were like I guess they were just because they were small and you could record on them pretty easily. But they seem like the one that didn't fit. Like, records are cool, tapes suck, CDs are fine, and then digital's whatever. Digital's fine too, but I don't know. Do you have like an album, like a album that stands out in your hand? I mean, I have a ton of them, but it's weird. Like, I'm playing them all the way through now. It's kind of fun.
I mean, I guess it always goes back to my story, how I went for a good 3-4 year period. I didn't listen to any kind of music at all. If I was riding with the parents, I had the talk radio on, or they would listen to country. Right. When I'm watching MTV, everything's like, oh, this is the greatest. I'm like, no, it's not. And I always remember working in Princeton at a bank and first hearing Green Day when they got, not Dookie. Their first two, Dookie. I mean, they did two albums, and then Dookie took off, and that was the first time I even remember saying, Mom, I want a CD for Christmas. Yep. She kind of looked at me, and like, yeah, seriously, I'm actually want to listen to music right now.
You animal.
Don't tell me you're into the rock and roll.
Oh, no. We lost another one to the rock and roll. First your brother, now you.
That's fine, but don't you dare go dancing.
Yeah, Dookie was like, almost everyone I know's first CD or two was Dookie. Like, I told, like, when we did the Chris Ballew thing, it was Dookie and Presidents of the United States of America. Those are the first two CDs I remember.
Yeah.
And I remember getting them from Columbia House, where you get, like, 10 CDs for a penny or whatever it was.
Yeah. But make sure you get back to them and, what's this bill?
Yeah, exactly.
Dad, I put in my penny.
Yeah, I remember, like, sitting around my grandma's house, like, because that's, like, Christmas would be coming up, and we'd, like, punch out the little holes in the Columbia House thing, like, the CDs you wanted. And then, like, I don't know, I guess you had to order, like, one a month or something like that after that.
I wonder if they're still around.
I don't know.
Let's check it out.
But, yeah, the whole album thing, like, has really got me going. Now, I've always been enjoyed albums, but for so, like, I think a record forces you to almost listen to the album. It's nice to play in the house, and you know. But anyway, maybe we'll get back to that in a little bit.
Yeah, they're still around.
So Coheed and Cambria has been an important. I love they're definitely an album band. Like you got to like get the vibe of them to really get the vibe of them. You got to pick it up from song one, go through it. It's like. The music sounds like an epic journey, like Star Wars, kind of like it, you could almost picture. And there's been talks like movies with the character, like his comic book and stuff. But and you can kind of picture it in your head with the characters and whatnot. Now, exactly what it's about, I haven't read the comics that closely to go into it. But this week, so well, first in about hopefully 5 minutes, we have the drummer from Coheed and Cambria calling us, which is pretty awesome, Josh Eppard. It's a big moment.
That's all he goes by, the drummer.
The drummer, yeah. So it's a pretty big moment. Like, Thrice was one of my favorite bands of all time. We got to talk to their drummer a couple months back now. Then Victor Wooten is my favorite bass player. I got to talk to him. And now, hopefully, we get to talk to the drummer. And, so the drummer of Coheed and Cambria. And so I'm going to stop it here.
Yeah.
And
ironically, I don't like anybody or any guest we ever had.
Anybody. Weird thing. You don't like anybody.
Not even you.
Well, that I can understand. Yeah. That I can understand.
I was the one who took your key fob, FYI.
I hate all our guests. not
Sharon
one.
Sharon Alexander!
Not one Dukes of Hazzard character yet.
Not one. I even asked for Cooter.
I don't even know who that is. But anyway,
want me to get through it?
We're gonna wait. Let's just put the interview off and talk about Cooter for for a few minutes. But we're going to wait here for Josh Eppard to call, and fingers crossed.
It's just pour. I don't know where you live, but it's pouring sheets of rain here.
Yeah.
And I was coming up from a doctor's appointment. I was stuck on the thruway 5 minutes from home. I really didn't think it would take that long, but alas, I am home, and I'm really sorry for the delay, man.
Hey, no problem, man. I'm actually just glad you called just now, too.
Holy shit, Facebook Messenger.
But anyway, yeah, we're right in Jersey, so I'm not too far from you. I'm actually probably... You're kind of by like Nyack or something, right?
No, that's Claude and Travis are from Nyack. I live now up in Albany, but I'm from Woodstock.
Oh, okay. So you're about 2 hours away.
It's all, within a few hours of each other. But, I grew up in Woodstock, but I moved upstate to Albany.
Oh, that's awesome. But anyway, man, thank you for calling me and giving me a few minutes here. I know you're probably busy as hell. I was just explaining before I just went to your show on Monday night. Fantastic as always. But the first thing I really wanted to ask you was you're coming off a tour that's, you know, a little different. You're doing Neverender, which for people who don't know is you're playing all of one album front to back and then plus encores and all that. And now you guys are going off to Europe, I guess, in what, a week or something like that?
Yeah, something like that.
How do you, does it take a whole different kind of mental and physical preparation to play like that, to play through a full album, especially something like Good Apollo?
Sure. That's a really good question, man, because it does. It really does. Now, that's not to say for, you know, other tours, we just duct tape a set list together. We'll get through it. We care about every tour.
Of course.
But there were songs on Good Apollo 1 that even though I made the record back in 2005, we rehearsed the shit out of that record and wrote for months. We finally had a budget to do things like that. So we were like, you know, a bunch of derelicts with major label money taking advantage of it. We holed up in a studio. We did all this stuff.
Right.
It was a really ambitious record. And there were songs on there that we had never played live after they were recorded. Never. So it took. There was a lot of preparation. I was actually having tour nightmares before this tour, just, you know, probably a mix of like the little bit of anxiety, little bit of excitement, or I'd say a lot of excitement.
Right.
And I knew the tour was coming up, and I'd have these tour nightmares where opening night, the curtain opens and somehow I forgot to put heads on my drums or, I said, oh shit, I forgot to rehearse. Somehow we did this and we forgot to rehearse. One night, this is a true story, man. I kid you not, this is true. I was in my apartment in Kingston, New York, and I must have had a notebook and a pen next to me. And I had one of these dreams. And in the dream, we forgot to rehearse. And the rest of the band was like, ah, we got it. And I was like, well, I sure don't. So in the dream, I have my iPod in and I'm just taking furious notes. And I woke up with a pen and paper, notebook and pen right next to me with just scribbles all over. I wrote all over lyrics that I had written the night before, just scribbled all over them. And I sent the picture to the band. It was like a waking dream. I must have in my sleep woke up, grabbed my notebook and pen, and then fell asleep back into the same dream. At least that's my best guess as to what happened. And there was no words, just scribbles. It looked like M's over and over again. But I had, you know, to answer your question in a little bit more concise way, yes, it took a lot of preparation and a lot of time. But that also is part of the payoff.
Totally. I mean, totally, yeah.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that kind of hard work goes in. That's part of it, you know, and that's also part of the fun. But it was working. That was a long show for us, too. Hour, 45 minutes well, it's funny. Every night.
It's funny, just listening to the album. Like, I was like, oh, I got to catch up on the album a little bit before, you know, the week leading up to it. And I'm like, oh, sure, man, sure. I kind of forgot, like, you know, I can't imagine, never mind playing it. But there was a couple of songs I'm like, oh, yeah, like, I don't think I've ever seen this one live. Like, that's, you know. And then I was watching your little
clip. Yeah, I think we thought the same thing.
And I was watching your little clip videos that you guys are putting out, and you were like, I don't know, there's a whole bunch of clips of you taping up your hands and stuff like that. I'm sure it's pretty damn physically demanding.
Yeah, it really is, man. I don't think people really think about that too often in terms of playing, and not just on the drummer, on those guys too. You know, the guitar's around your neck, and, you know, we're not 21 years old. Right. So we hurt sometimes. Yeah, I split my thumb open. Although, when we were rehearsing this record, the band Thursday was rehearsing right next to the store. And I walk out, Tucker's got his thumb all taped up. Just happens to drummers, I think. You know, your thumb split, your finger split. The problem is you don't have 5 days for it to heal. It's healed already. It just needed like 2-3 days to heal. But we don't take 2 or 3 days off. So it's split for the whole tour.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you I wanted to ask you, like, going backwards a little bit, like, you were out of the band for a little while. You came back, and I think a big part of Coheed is your particular style. Like, I could pick out, you know, your style. I don't know how to describe. I guess a lot of syncopated kind of rolls and cymbal hole. You know, I feel like I could pick you out. Did you have a main influence, like, drummer wise, or did you really just kind of you know, blend together a whole bunch of different things and it became your style?
Yeah, I mean, my main influence, the home base guy, but you know what sucks is this is the same answer every drummer gives, but I'll be damned if it isn't the truth, man. John Bonham, yep, Led Zeppelin. That's the reason I played drums.
It's a good reason.
Yeah, he's the best. Still the holds funkiest, up. I mean, he gets all this credit as the greatest rock drummer, but I think it was Dave Grohl that said, like, nobody ever talks about how funky John Bonham was, and that was what he was. He was the shit. He was funky. Yes, it was rock and roll, but it was always goddamn groovy. And so that's the main reason. But from there, God, so many influences. There are too many to name. I mean, there was a local drummer named Chris Gartman who just – I never saw anybody play drums like that. And to this day, I still kind of borrow from the bag of tricks that he taught me. And just being – growing up in Woodstock and being exposed to so many – real A-list players, you know, had a great impact on me, from Levon Helm to Gerada, Harvey Sorgan. The list is endless. But I think somewhere in there, my style was born, and it's probably just a mixture of all those different guys inspiring and motivating me as a player.
Yeah, man. I mean, you definitely have a style that, like, you know, I loved Chris Penny, but, like, I feel like you just the back end of that, the Coheed sound is that, you know, it's the cymbals and the snare hits that really, I don't know, it blends the guitars and everything together, and it's like, it's always nice. It's like, I remember hearing you were coming back. I'm like, yes, and I think a lot of Coheed fans had that same reaction. So
yeah, it certainly seemed like it, which was, you know, unbelievably flattering and you know, a really powerful thing for me to kind of internalize, because I had come to terms with the fact that I always thought it was really special when we played together. People always told us that, but, you know, after a few years, I kind of thought, oh, maybe they just tell every band that. Maybe it was just all in my head. So, yeah, seeing the overwhelmingly positive response when I came back was really, I mean, what can I say, dude? I was like a you know, crying little baby. I was really touched and really moved and continue to be so. I think those words you say are really flattering and really kind. So I really appreciate it, man. Thank you.
No, I mean, I appreciate you hearing you, you know, and it's, I mean, it's the truth.
Right,
it's
on.
The truth that every Coheed fan I talk to is the same kind of reaction, but, go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, and that's beautiful to me. Imagine you're me, like how that feels. I mean, so many drummers don't get any love. And,
no.
You know,
I'm a bass player. It's even worse.
That's the name of the game. That's what it's like being a drummer. But
I don't play anything,
you know, I get
so it's really hard for me.
An incredible amount of love.
You do, man. I mean, I was going to say, the drums and bass. I play bass. It's even worse. Some people think you just pick up a, you know, oh, yeah, you can't play guitar, but you can play bass. Like, it's like, no, man, that's not how it works.
Yeah, dude, we're in the same boat. Drummers and bass players just get shit on everywhere. And, you know, if your band doesn't have a good rhythm section, your band sucks.
Absolutely. 100%. 100%. Yeah. I was nice to see you on the tour the other day. You and Josh doing a little bass and drums there. I was like, yes, you know.
Yeah, we never did anything like that before. And the results were phenomenal. We had a good time with it, and it was a lot of fun for me and Zach. Yeah, it was really cool.
Yeah, did I just say Josh? I think I said you, but that's Josh.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what I meant. You and yourself. No.
Yeah. Total mistake, Scott. Total rookie podcast mistake.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you, you came over to the band from your brother's band, Three. What has that changed like to go from like a family to another band?
Oh, that's a good question. it was different, you know. It was like, I mean, if we're really going to get into it, it was really heavy on the family side because, you know, my mom was certainly not pleased with me. She was really upset about me leaving the family band. This band, you know, we got signed to Universal. We did these things that just don't happen to a lot of bands, and we had worked really hard. But I just, something in me, I knew it was time to leave. I knew it was time to go and find my own thing, you know, because I was getting told by managers and record label people and all these things that I didn't agree with. And I wanted to find a band that had some balls. And not to diss my brother's band, I love Three. I mean, God, Coheed's brought Three out on tour like 5 times.
Right.
But I just felt like that I loved the band that me and my brother were, not the band that it was turned into by producers and record labels. And it was just, it had no balls. And I was going to go join a band that I thought had some edge to it that I liked. And that happened to be Shibuti. When Mike Todd called me and he said, would you be down to play with us? And there wasn't even a question. I was like, dude, I have to. What are you talking about? Let's fucking do this shit. And yeah, I never thought I'd say this. It's so corny, but the rest is history.
Oh,
how stupid.
No, but
do you have those weird family get-togethers where they bring it up on you?
You know, me and my brother somehow, and I give us a lot of credit for this. It was never weird between me and my brother. It was always just from outside family members, but there's still some residual weirdness. I did a song
really?
On one of my weird science records with Claudio called The Dust of My Dad's Dreams.
I love that.
And sometimes, man, it's really, really heavy for Claudio to hear some of these things because he just can't imagine that kind of dynamic. But the Eppard family, it's a very different kind of very unique family dynamic. We're all musicians and we all have our own, you know, unique hopes and dreams as far as this business, you know, from not just commercially, but artistically. And sometimes, you know, I felt like my dad was kind of projecting his on us. And then one day I said, hey, I'm out. I'm splitting. And I went and made all my dreams come true with a different. So you can imagine my dad probably does harbor some resentment, but maybe, you know, it's not ever bad. You know, we're efforts, and when we get together, it's all good because we all love each other very much. And, you know, my dad's like a guitar legend in this town. So I have nothing but the ultimate respect and admiration for my pops.
No future Eppard family band tours coming up?
Not tours, but we do shows all the time.
Really? That's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
But let me ask you something. You brought up Claudio. I wanted to, as the drummer or even the bass player, like with this big universe that a lot of Coheed's about and the comics and the songs and the everything, do you guys tie into it? Do you know exactly what's going on? Or do you kind of just let Claudio come up with that and then
you are more about the music, or are you guys involved with, like, does he explain what, you know, this is what this means and this is what I'm envisioning? Like, how does that go with songwriting with you guys?
It depends, because, I mean, you talk to any Coheed fan, and I guarantee you they can tell you more about the story than I know.
Yeah. But that's what I was wondering.
At the same time, when the story, when it's paramount that we understand a piece of something that really ties in, you know, with Coheed, it was always you can enjoy the music without having to dig into the Definitely. Story. That was always a big, important part. You know, coming up to this new record that we're going to make, you know, it seems like there are story elements that are, and this will make sense to you, I think, after the record comes out, mm-hmm. that are, you know, it's paramount. It's very important that the band understands exactly what we're doing. And it does have to do with the story. So when that happens, I'm always open to learning. And, you know, I've read all the comic books. I've read all the books. I just, you know, there are people out there that spend hours every day digging in different theories. Those are the people I mean. I mean, I have a pretty good grasp, like, what's going to happen. But I'll tell you, a good answer would be, I know what Claudio thinks is going to happen this week, but it usually changes week to week as he's creating something. So I never let it, like, you know, it's not concrete ever, because it's an evolving kind of thing. And as he's creating it, though, usually we'll be just drinking beers and he gets like an excited kid telling us, like, and then this, and then this, and then this, and we're all just like, oh, cool.
You're like, cool, 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 yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's exciting to hear just as a friend, but only when it's super important for the art. I mean, my main focus is the music in Coheed and Cambria and being the band on the planet. That's my goal, and that's what I'm focused on.
Yeah, I mean, like, the music, and you guys are, you're arguably the known as the tightest band, like, I go see frequently, you know, whenever you're around. And, like, I got to share my girlfriend, she loves Good Apollo. She's not, you know, she doesn't know the other albums that much. So to take her the other night was a really cool experience. I'm like, you just watch, you know, you're going to be blown away. And she's like, okay. And then after the concert, she's like, oh my God, you know, those guys are so, like, tight. I'm like, I know, I told you. So it was really cool to share it with somebody else, you know.
Sure, that's amazing.
Yeah, and I don't know. I was like wondering, like, when do you guys have done so much, and you're such a unique band that I feel like that's probably a double edged sword. Like, everyone wants to see you close, like, your own show. Like, when you guys have to, like, open for bands, is it tough? Because I try to explain, like, to people who don't know your music, like, hey, you know, some songs are so rock and heavy, but then some are like pop punky, and it's almost like I got to choose, like, hey, you're into this, here's these five songs that kind of fit this genre, but they have a whole other side to them. Do you guys find that like hard to open for other bands or festivals?
Yes, dude, of course.
Yeah.
Of course. And I mean, you know, up until like the last five festival shows have been so good for us that maybe we're turning a corner as far as festivals go. I knock on wood.
Right.
Because it's always been such a mixed bag, and we've had really just poor festival shows, bad shows.
Right.
You know, not always, but I'm saying throughout the history of Coheed and Cambria, there's been those shows and, like, you know, opening for bands where, yeah, hell yeah, it's tough. When you've got such an eclectic mix of styles and different energies, you know, packing it into a short set, you know, opening up for some band, yeah, it's really tough. It's really hard. That being said, no bands will take us out anyway, so it doesn't really matter. You know, Iron Maiden took us out, and that was, like, perfect. It was so awesome.
I remember
that. They were so good to us. Those shows killed, and it was a really exciting thing for us. But, you know, it's really tough for us to find bands. You know, there's not a gazillion rock bands anyway. And
no,
then finding one that's going to mix with the weirdest band on the planet, yeah, it's fucking tough, man.
Now, when you are spending time off like you are right now, or when you, like, when this tour finally ends, like, you know, you got the rap thing, you do some other things. Do you always surround yourself with music, or do you just try to get away from it for a little while?
I think it's always different. There's definitely times where, you know, if I come home from a 2-month tour,
yeah,
the next day I'm sitting behind a drum set practicing my chops. You know, it's like I'll take a few days off, but music's always a running. I mean, I just never get too far away from it. And it's funny I say that, and I'm standing here in my living room looking at my guitar when earlier yesterday, my first day home, I started writing a song. It's just there. It's part of what I am. So right. It's just naturally, it comes out. But you know, different. I don't jump on the drums right away. My hands need to heal up, so I take maybe some time away from the drums. Mm-hmm. But then I'm playing a lot of keyboards or a lot of guitar. Or I'm writing a lot, so it's always something. It's just you can't get away from yourself, and it's part of who I am, you know. So it's no matter what I do. If I was locked in a cabin and I only had two wood blocks, well, I'd make a record that was all wood blocks.
I smell think that's concept a pretty good album.
Coheed and Cambria, wood blocks. No.
Yeah, that's our next record. I just gave away the secret.
All right. I know you don't have a lot of time, but I wanted. Speaking of things that are part of you, and they're also part of me, I am a gigantic Met fan, as are you.
Right on.
What's going on with this, man?
Well, they can't pitch, for one.
Can't pitch, can't field, can't mm-hmm. stay healthy.
Yeah, dude, it's tough. I don't, you know.
It's really frustrating.
I do reserve like this shred of hope that they're going to go on a run and knock off 9 in a row. But then you say, well, how the hell is that going to happen when, like, you know, every other night they're giving up 8 runs? It's like.
Yeah, if I was to sit you down and be like, Josh, you're going to have no closer, no best outfielder, mm-hmm. no, your ace is gone. And that's all within the first month and a half. You'd be like, come on, you know?
Yeah, dude.
That's rough.
Yeah. It's definitely dire straits. It's not good, man. Yoenis will be back soon, but they haven't had a hard time scoring runs.
No.
Isn't it funny? It's the exact opposite. No one in their right mind, no rational fan would have said, oh, well, the Mets' problem this year will be pitching. It's because they're scoring runs. They just can't seem to pitch, starters and the bullpen. I mean, what the hell happened last night?
Three.
Because Elman, yep. All we hear about is the starters need to go deeper. The starters need to go deeper. Well, you got G-Man at 80, what is it, 84 pitches.
Yep.
Harvey he said the after other the day, game he was innings. Fine to go out for the seventh. I mean, what the hell is Terry thinking?
I mean, Fernando Sala is going to have no arm by July 8th.
Yeah, his arm's just going to disintegrate at some point. Why not try to get – and I, you know what? I really try to, like, really try to understand and sympathize with Terry. And he said he wanted to have Gazelman get out feeling good. He's had such a rough season so far. Now, I understand that, but – this guy's a professional baseball player.
Yeah.
This isn't single A. At some point, I want to take him out. So you basically gave away the game. I understand that Terry felt like Salas was going to come in anyway. But
Salas is always in. That's always the game plan.
Well, it seems like every game that's the game plan. But wait, think about this. Somebody said this in one of the comments on Metsmerized. So you took the guy out that it was working, who just had a nice clean inning, and you put in the guy that needs rest. It actually makes zero sense, and it's a really bonehead move on his part. But I'm not a total Terry hater. I'm rooting for the guy, and I'm rooting for the Mets. But it's been awful.
I'm not a Terry hater either. You got to think about some.
We're talking about the Padres, dude.
You got to remember some of those starting lineups he had to roll out 2 years ago. I mean, you got to
even
give
last
some
year
credit.
With all those injuries and somehow. Getting
oh yeah, dude.
Numbers,
yeah, there's no question.
Yeah, he gets a bad rap because he does make some questionable moves in there. But who else do you want? Who's going to come in and do a better job? That's what I always say. People are obsessed with Wally Backman. Like, enough already with the Wally Backman. Enough.
Yeah, but you know what happened? If the Mets hired Wally Backman, these same people, they'd hate him. They'd want him out the door, too. I don't know if they think there's a manager out there that's the perfect manager that never makes decisions that – this is baseball.
Yeah.
Every night.
It's a storyline.
I like that Terry will go with his gut sometimes. Last night, it's a little crazy. In hindsight, if it worked, it looks great. And that's baseball, man. If it worked, it looks great. If it doesn't work, you look like a bonehead. But I would have kept Gazelman in for one more inning. If he got in trouble, then I would have went to Salas or possibly somebody else. But he's got no bullets in the bullpen. Who the hell does he trust in that bullpen?
Nobody.
To get us through the seventh or the eighth. Exactly.
Nobody.
Seems like whoever you bring in is going to blow it. So I don't envy the man. Things are tough in Mets land right now, dude.
It's
they've
tough,
got
man.
To. I mean, there's not going to be a game tonight, I don't think, with the rain. But they've got
hurts.
To take
they
care of the Padres.
It.
These
it
are the
hurts.
Games they've got to win.
They are. They took this season you're so excited about and made you like, oh, boy, it's going to be a climb all year long again.
That's why I like
the
Phillies.
I knew feel like an idiot
sad.
For thinking this team was good. Yeah. I mean, I can't believe I consider myself a student of the game of baseball, and I really thought that this team – was going to be really good. I said, there's no way the injuries are going to be as bad as last year. And boy, was I wrong.
Josh, so before you go, you guys are off to Europe, what, in a week or like 10 days, I think you said?
Not even 10 days. I think we fly out on the 3rd.
Now, are you, as a band, do you guys get psyched to go to Europe, or is it hard to be away from family and whatnot, or a little bit of both?
A little bit of both. I mean, you always feel extra far from home in Europe, you know, but I really enjoy going over there. I mean, you know, some shows are better than others. I mean, I love the UK. I love playing in London. We're doing two nights at the Coco. I think they're both sold out, or awesome. If not, the first one is, and the second one is mega close. And it's just, you know, the UK is kind of like America. Big shows, a lot of love. There's some, you know, spots in Europe that just don't seem to like Coheed, and that's fine. That's cool, Europe. It's all good.
screw you, you know, Luxembourg.
I do enjoy it, though. But yeah, hell yeah, I feel far from home, and sometimes, you know, that can be tough. But this is part of it, and it took years to learn to enjoy going to Europe, but I did. I really enjoy going over there, and I really love playing in Europe, and it's its own unique thing. I mean, and it's beautiful. I get to go see the world, and it's pretty cool.
Awesome, man. Josh, I know you originally wanted to do 3.5 hours with us, but we're going to have to cut you short at 29.
Oh, man, I'm devastated, you guys. Devastated.
Josh, thank you so much for getting back to us. I know that kind of sucked the traffic and whatnot, and just giving us a few minutes on your downtime while you know, you have a couple days to get your head straight and whatnot. I really appreciate it. Your music's been a big part of my life for a long time now, so keep doing what you're doing. And I hope to have Travis on Tuesday, which is kind of cool. So I might put you both on one episode.
Oh, excellent. Hey, Travis is a great interview, man. Travis is such a funny dude.
Yep.
You know, when he's comfortable, he's the funniest guy on the planet. I love that guy so much. He's the sweetest, most kindest, gentle giant. We call him Bam Bam. He doesn't know his own strength. He'll go to give you a hug. He'll break your fucking arm. But he's just the sweetest guy. And tell him I said that. Tell him I called him Bam Bam. And, hey, I hope we get a chance to do this again, guys. I'm sorry about being late. I'm just at my job. And, yeah, hopefully we can do this again in the future.
Yeah, man. Well, when the Mets are just about to blow their chance at the playoffs, maybe we'll talk Mets
again.
Yeah,
that's when we'll get on the line together and we can just cry for a while.
That's fine. Mm-hmm. Last question. You got some cool glasses going on. How many different colors of those glasses do you got going?
I think about four different colors now.
I feel like every video or picture I see teal and red and, you know.
Yeah, well, dude, I found this website, Zenni Optical. These glasses cost me like $30.
That's pretty
with cool. The lenses. $30.
Really? Wow.
And these are not fashion accessories, dude. I can't see. I'm blind. And so I got some cheap glasses, but I just always thought there was some kind of catch. There's no way anybody's getting glasses that cheap because glasses cost you $300, $400, $500. That's the way it's always been. I was wrong. Zenni Optical, ZENNI Optical.com. I do not work for them. They have no idea who I am. It's unbelievable. $20, $30 glasses with the lenses. Unreal.
It's going to be on the bass drum head next year.
I know, right? I'm going to get a Zenni tattoo. I don't have anything to do with that company. I'm starting to feel like maybe they should send me some money because all I do is talk about how great they are. But
until next year, one eye doesn't work.
Glasses. You can't beat it.
Next year, you have one lazy eye, and we're like, $30 glasses.
Now we know what.
Just spend some of that band money on change.
That's amazing, dude. I'm so sore from playing softball yesterday. You just hurt my ribs from laughing. That's amazing. Now we know why they're $20. Yeah.
Josh, thanks so much, man. Take care and good luck.
You guys too. Peace, fellas.
All right. So, Barlow, this is day three of four that I've seen you, right?
Yeah, marathon, man.
Something like that. I'm really getting sick of seeing you.
You say that when we see each other once a week.
Once a month.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's been a kind of a hectic schedule here. Just weird times. Right now it's the middle of the day. Mm-hmm. So we've done one early in the morning. We did one on a day we don't usually do. And then we're now doing one in the middle of the afternoon.
And during our work week, so, like, nothing's going on, nothing.
What are you talking about? It's not the work week.
Well, it's the middle of June when school's over with, so.
Exactly. But we were lucky enough to have get Josh Epper, the drummer of Coheed, a few days ago. And now we are lucky enough to piggyback it with the guitar player from Coheed and Cambria, which is pretty friggin' awesome for me. The band have been following for years at this point. And like I said, just saw them last Monday. So not too often we get one member of the band. We get two members of the band in one episode, two separate interviews. I mean, the Seagulls, we had all five.
Mm-hmm.
You remember all their names, right?
Himmel, Reiko, Rikkomini.
Yeah. Something like that. You know what we should ask them? I wonder if they know Heavysaurus. Weren't they from Finland? The dinosaur metal band that we looked up?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Finland. I think it
Let's
was.
Let's look that up real quick before we get to this.
Yeah.
Let's look up the important things.
Travis, first question. Do you know about that Finnish dinosaur band? Can you hook us up?
Heavysaurus. Where are you at? Of course, the computer doesn't feel like working. Heavysaurus.
Yep.
They're a Finnish heavy metal band. Why don't we... great things come out of Finland. Steven Seagulls and Heavysaurus.
Mm-hmm.
And Timo Solani. But,
I just see, like, Finland building, like, bronze statues, and those are the three they put up.
Dinosaur, a jug band, and a hockey player.
Yeah.
But anyway, let's give Travis a call.
All right.
So it should be awesome. This is Travis Stever.
Hello.
Hey, is this Travis Stever?
Yes, sir. How are you?
How's it going, man? Thank you for giving us a few minutes here.
No problem. I really literally can only do 15 because I am the my wife is waiting to go out with, and we have the baby here.
No, that's fine. No
7
problem.
Months, so.
7 months, geez.
This is not a solicitation call. Hi, this is the Credit Card Holder Award Center from Visa MasterCard. We have been monitoring.
Hello?
Was that you or me?
That was me. I just got called by like a Visa collector or something like that.
That'd been great, and you hung up on Travis and kept that on the line. Really? Tell me more about Visa.
That's great.
But no problem, man. Thanks for giving us even just a few minutes. It's a real pleasure.
No problem.
Your life's got to be crazy at the moment. Not only did you just say you had a 7-month-old, but you guys are coming off a major tour, and I guess we actually had the pleasure of talking to Josh last week, so which is pretty cool. And you guys have I guess you're going out to Europe in a few days, right?
Yeah, we actually leave Sunday, this coming Sunday.
And how long are you going to be out?
We are out for it's a little over 2 weeks.
Okay. All right, so it's not like a couple months away from the family then.
It's not huge. It's not terrible. So
I had asked Josh about you obviously play different instruments, but you guys are you're doing something like Never Ender, which is an hour and 45 minutes, something like that. It's a lot of music, a lot of songs. He was saying there are a lot of songs that you guys haven't played in years. What kind of like mental preparation and physical preparation you guys got to do for something like that?
I mean, for him especially, to be in shape is really important, but for all of us it is, in the sense that, you know, especially if we're putting on a good show and, you know, it becomes a little bit of a physical endeavor, like, you know, a bit of jumping around, especially because, you know, we get into it. That's kind of part of, I think, the appeal for our live show is
100%.
Yeah, man, I think that seeing us enjoy ourselves is a big part of it. And funny enough, it usually depends on the crowd, too, because if the crowd is super into it, you're going to see us go a lot nuttier. It's almost like we feed off each other.
Definitely.
But regardless, you know, we're up there enjoying what we do, but we're doing it for an hour and 45 minutes, and you don't want to have a heart attack, you know? So you do have to be in shape. And then the other side of it is like with, you know, playing, muscle memory will come in, but, you know, you do have to have your chops up a bit. I'd say I started, you know, about 3 weeks before we even rehearsed, like, at least running through a couple of songs a day,
right,
and playing all the way through them, because, you know, before that it was, you know, we're always all working on all different new music all the time,
right?
But for the most part it was at my leisure for the couple of months during the holidays and stuff, and I was really daddy duties more than anything for those months with the new baby, and so it's like I had to kind of get back into that. And it worked out, man.
Oh,
I mean, the first 4 or 5 days of rehearsal that we did, you know, and it usually happens, but you still go into it a little anxious about it. But
they were
extremely good. You know,
well, we went. I told you. I think I messaged you. We went on
the last show, the Terminal 5 show, the 22nd. And I was telling Josh, was able to take my girlfriend. I wasn't going to go because I've seen you guys so many times. I'm like, all right, well, they're doing Neverender. And that happened to be like the one album that she really, really loved. And it was amazing, cool. Man. It was amazing to like share that experience. Like, she's never seen, I'm like, you guys, you got to see this band live, you know. And it was a hell of a show. And I'm just, as I'm watching you guys, I'm thinking like this, you know, Good Apollo is not an easy album to like. That's a physically demanding album. Like just especially halfway on all the way through the end is you know, that's a lot.
I agree. But it's so funny that we got through like doing it for these 6 weeks that now I'm like, you know, it's not so bad. But I mean, if we did it like the first week, if we did this interview, I would have been like, oh yeah, I'm a little concerned how this is going to be. But
now, do you guys get you like? Is that a fun thing for you? Like planning the Neverender, like because it's so different than your normal set list, which is like covering whatever it is, 6-7 albums.
Yeah, it is fun because I think that anybody who's up, most people that love what they do are up for a challenge in it, and I think that we all kind of share that unique. Motivation with the challenge, you know, like that it's like, all right, we're gonna do this, we're gonna do this whole thing, you know. I mean, granted, Josh wasn't part of the when we did the four nights
right
10 years ago, but yeah, I know that he would be game, and you know, we'll hopefully everything will happen and make, you know, everything will work out and we can do something like that again.
Yeah. But as you get more and more albums, it's going to be a week
long.
Well,
yeah, no, but even things that just fit into like, you know, those original records,
right.
and just, you know, just doing a consecutive, like 5-6 consecutive nights or 7, you know, I mean, 7 in a row would sound a little insane. Maybe you do like a day in between or something. But, you know, it's.
Are you kidding me? No.
They should just go on stage.
Believe me, these things have been discussed, and who knows how we would split it off or how we would do it. But I know that all of us would be up for the challenge. So.
If there's a band that can do it, I feel like you guys would be. It would be right up your alley.
I feel they
should. Well, thanks, Scott. I appreciate that. That's a big compliment because. You know, it's a tough one, and I really do. I feel that way too. I feel like we'd be able to kill it.
Yeah. But, see, what I feel you should do is just put every album into like a barrel, and you guys come up on stage and you just pick one out. Well, oh, we're doing this tonight.
Every song.
That would be interesting too, man.
I'm sure the sound and lighting guys would love that.
Ah, shit! They're gonna do that one. Yeah, that'd be pretty amazing.
Well, let me ask you something. You've been with Claudio and the band since the inception.
Absolutely.
When Claudio comes to you with this idea of these comics and this story and, you know, these planets and space and robots and all that stuff, are you like, yeah, cool? Or are you like, huh? Like, you have to wait, you know, see how it played out. And I also asked Josh,
definitely early on was a digestion at first because, but I mean, he had the idea for this with this project before we took the name on. And it was kind of like, you can't be, you know, there was no surprise in the fact that he was like, oh, no, I'm carrying that concept over to this, too, because the names came from the concept.
Right.
And so at first it was like, oh, what are we doing here? And I'll be honest with you, like within only a couple of years, and especially the way the music industry was changing and the demographic, having that additional world for people to dive into, like, because you don't have to follow it. But
no.
I find the people that get totally into the music and especially his lyrics are like, I really need to find out what's up here. And then they get kind of sucked in, you know, and a lot of people are just huge fans of the whole universe.
Yeah,
universes.
I like to
developed.
Think of like you guys, like you and Zach, or, you know, you have to sing backup and stuff. Do you ever have to be like, what the hell are the lyrics? Like,
I've been listening to those lyrics so many years that I'm quite, you know, not quite. And actually, you know what? It's like, it's aged like a fine, like a fine wine in certain ways because it's so original and different. Like I would consider myself a huge music buff. I've listened to a lot of music in my life and I just, you know, it kind of, after all these years, hearing the uniqueness of how he's pieced words and storylines together has kind of like, you know, you take a step back because from the beginning, I was just there, and I was there for it. And you kind of like, I don't know how to describe it. It's not like you take it for granted.
Of course.
But you're kind of like, oh, I'm used to how this guy works. He's used to how I work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes it works perfectly. Sometimes there's heads butted, and sometimes, you know, but you start to just get used to it, and you're like, it's second nature, and you don't even think about it too much. I mean, there's definitely been lyrics that have passed by, and I nowadays, well, like, he'll just flat out, like, tell me what's going on, and, right. and, you know, like, and if I don't understand, I'll ask, you know. It's not, there's no hiding that, and I'm quite intrigued, you know. Like, I
mean, that's definitely,
I've grown into more being appreciative, actually, of that side of everything being there, because with our band, it's like, you know, I think the music and our songs could stand alone, but having that just adds this whole other character to the whole, you know, to the, what's the right word I'm looking for? Not to the brand, that makes it sound like,
I know what you mean.
Band,
yeah, like,
but you know what I mean.
100%. I mean, it's something when you tell people, like, who don't even listen to the band, they're like, oh, well, that's kind of interesting. Like, even if I don't listen, they're like, that's pretty cool, you know?
Yeah, exactly, man. It's.
Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you, you've been with Claudio for two different bands, with Toxic Parents, Beautiful Loser. Do you feel those bands could have handled this genre, or do you think you guys grew enough?
We were kids, man. Yeah. Those bands, I don't even know what genre they were. They were whatever everybody was listening to at a certain time.
I'm not sure you guys know what genre you are either, which is what's cool about it.
Well, now, still.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. But, I mean, especially when we were in high school, I mean, it was all the stepping stones and developments of what we would become, you know. Like, we went through all these different processes until we became, you know, became Coheed and Cambria. I mean, even before that, with the band that it was, you know, with Shibuti, like, a lot of people know these names but don't realize that Coheed, once it was Coheed and Cambria, really had taken off to be its own band,
right,
outside of those things. Like, they're musically, like, in a couple of those bands prior, even, like, different vocalists and different, you know, mm-hmm. or different vocal approaches and different styles of music. So,
yeah.
I mean, yes, obviously the closest to it is Shibuti, because that was Claudio singing, and then mm-hmm. I joined it. And I'd say I was only in Shibuti for about a year and a half before it turned, maybe 2 years at the most, before it turned over to Coheed. And during that year and a half, 2 years, it was just a consistent, like, change. Musically,
yeah, I mean,
you know,
like, you got to think about, like, every band needs, or bands, you know, I feel like it takes a couple years to even find out what the hell you want to do and where you're going with stuff like that, especially with your guys' music. It's so, I guess, different, and now you bring a story into it, and you're playing multiple different styles, you know, like, every time, every other song on the album sometimes is a different feeling to it, you know?
Exactly. And I mean, if you take a step back and look at the musicians that came to be involved, like, Josh was in that band three with his brother,
right,
up till he was 18 years old, you know, and all of a sudden he's joining with us, 19, 20, whatever. And he's bringing a whole different feel and style to
exactly.
it. So that's the musical side. And then what you just said, bringing in the concept side. So yeah, it changed into a completely different band.
Totally.
Would those bands have ever been able to be a part of any of this? No, because
right.
it was so different, you know.
Well, let me ask you, like,
different.
As you're talking, I'm thinking, like, you know, we're talking to you now about bands you had in high school and college, and, you know, college age. You guys have now been together through being kids, you know, growing up a little bit, successful.
Well, if I could stop you there, Scott, Coheed and Cambria was our college. I mean, Claudio went to the Audio Institute, you know, he got, you know, his audio engineering degree. I got an associate's degree. And basically we had, like, an agreement, like, all right, we're going to try and take this on the road.
That's great.
You know, we did, you know, I'd say we were, like, what, 22 at the oldest, when mm-hmm. we were like, we're going to go on the road and try this.
Awesome.
So instead of taking the degrees we had, like, I guess I would have went and continued to hopefully get that a bachelor's
yep.
degree, and he could have, like, started doing the studio work. But instead of doing that, we said, let's jump in this van.
100%.
And therefore, it became our college, sleeping on those amps and doing this and that, you know?
Like, I slept on amps, too, in college. No big.
Well, you know, but you get what I'm saying. Yeah. Like,
but I wanted to say, like, now you guys are families, married, parents, you're grown-ups now. Is it hard? Yeah. I'm sure you have a whole different perspective on, one, you're able to do music for a living, which has got to be, you know, a dream come true for a musician. But also, does it, your whole perspective change now you have kids and touring and going out on the
road?
You know, it's got to be tough, right?
For me personally, I always had an internal battle with being a homebody, even though all I wanted to do was see everywhere, doing my favorite thing, playing music.
Right.
So it's like this internal, like, struggle that's always going on. It's like when we would play fucking Boston, it would be, you know, Boston's like 3.5 hours from here.
Mm-hmm.
And like, even when I was like 22 and like between my now wife, but then just girlfriend. And even then we were like on and off. So sometimes I wouldn't even be coming back to her. I just wanted to come back to home.
Right.
So I would like even fucking, you know, have a friend come meet me and just be like, dude, I'll drive after the show and, you know, get home at 3:30 in the morning just to sleep on, even if it was my mom's couch or something, just to be in the home area.
Huh.
So it's like the one thing, this guy's got his dream come true. He's out there like all over the place, but I still always needed to touch home base, you know?
Right. That's sometimes definitely
home
a
base
struggle.
Is not about, now home base is my wife and my children and where we live, you know, wherever we live, but they are my home. But there was also like, there's always been that feeling that whatever home, wherever home is to you, that's where, you know, you're the most comfortable. And that's what I would always kind of carry with me is like, I got to just get back there and re-energize. And I think all the dudes have that,
totally.
You know, but so it's like such a interesting push and pull, internal battle for the wandering soul.
I mean, especially,
you know?
Like nowadays where, you know, album sales are not going to be what's putting your family through,
dude.
You know, feeding your family.
You
got to be on the road. And lucky enough, you guys, you have a terrific road show. You know, I feel like you've always been like, I think you, when you guys strip down songs acoustically, sometimes they're even better than the ones on the album. Like, I love you guys live. I think that's the biggest draw to your band, personally.
I appreciate that. That means a lot. And that's like the best thing to have now. So when you say that, it's really, you know, but it's still, we love recording and we love music too. Mm-hmm. So it's like, we can't wait to get back to that end of it. It's just, it's just that going out and doing a tour and really showing people that you can do everything live, you know, in what is hopefully perceived as the best way possible. It, you know, there's no more of a rewarding feeling than that, I don't think. Like, you know, because that's you physically doing it in front of people.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, like, real quick before we get out of here, I know your time is valuable here. You guys are, Josh mentioned you were working on some new stuff. You also got, you got Davenport Cabinet and some other things you've done. What are you currently working on? And also, I was told to call you Bam Bam.
Oh yeah, Bam Bam. Just always don't know the old strength. That's what it means. And I am a loud person. Even the other night, we were hanging out. Now we live in Nyack, New York, and we're outside.
Oh, you're not far at all.
We're all
us.
Talking on the porch. We used to live on 2.2 acres in Warwick.
I have a show tomorrow in Nyack at Maureen's Jazz Cellar. I have a comedy show.
Oh, that place is that place I heard is cool.
I love it. I think it's really cool. But
we grew up around here. I wish that I could go to it. We're taking my son camping with my dad.
That's awesome.
So, you know, because we're leaving Sunday, so we're doing all the family things.
Yeah,
before
that's why I thank you for just giving us a few minutes here on your like 2 weeks off, if that. You know?
it was like 11 days or 12 days, but it's all good. Who's counting? But yeah, we're going to go camping real quick, and then, you know, my wife's birthday is, we're leaving before my wife's birthday, so I'm going to take her out to dinner next night. So it's all like, it's all packed in. I sound like Frank the Tank from Old School. Bed Bath and Beyond.
I don't know if we'll have time.
So what are you guys working on? So basically, the Bam Bam thing, all I was going to say is that even the other night, we used to live on 2.2 acres. Now we have like neighbors right next door, and I just kept getting yelled at for how loud my voice is. Mm-hmm. And
you should understand, Mike.
Yeah. I think I can have a contest with Travis, and I'll see who has the loudest voice. Yeah.
Mike is actually not using a microphone. You're just hearing him through.
I'm at home right now.
Oh, then he's got, that carries. But so as for working on stuff, you know, I'm really just kind of here and waiting for the next step with whatever's going to happen, Coheed. There has been, you know, things. There's always things in the works.
Right.
I mean, I can't really say a lot.
That's fine.
But it's definitely there. But as for my own thing, I mean, the Davenport Cabinet thing, I kind of retired that name because that had to do with the house where I was living. Actually, funny enough, the 2.2 acres I'm talking about. And I had a nice studio room there and everything. And I had actually named the project after the room I recorded in. So, I mean, who knows? As of now, it's just kind of over. And my cousin, Tyler, actually became a big part of that with me, too. So it's like the last EP I released, which I'm super proud of, but I released this past fall. I just kind of was like, you know, it was more on my own endeavor. It was the last few songs I recorded in that house. And I was like, this is like a good way to say goodbye to it. So for the most part, you know, anything I've worked on otherwise, I've just kind of held off until seeing, you know, what's next. I don't really have a thing. Oh, I did do, I got that funny thing I do, the Fire Deuce, and I have some songs for that. I have about four or five songs for that.
Yeah, that is ridiculous. I saw it pop up on my Facebook feed one day. I'm like, what the hell is this?
Oh, yeah, these new songs are just absolutely fucking insane. Like, they're just, but I, you know, that's there. I don't really have a release for that yet. Letting things pile up, and eventually, you know, I mean, I'm always working on stuff, so I'm always excited to work on stuff. But more or less, the thing that I want to work on the most now is what's next with Coheed. Awesome. So
no, let me, when that
comes up and when it's happening, you know, I'm going to be full throttle with that.
That's awesome, man. And real quick, when you have this time off like this between, do you just like put music completely like shut it out, you know, or are you still like?
No, not usually at all. Usually it ends up that I can't stay away. And I think I know that that's the same for the other dudes. So it's just how it is, you know, and that's why I'm saying, like, hopefully, you know, I still don't want to say too much. Hopefully, eventually, we'll be working.
All right. We'll keep posting.
Dude, did you say we were making music?
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, once that starts happening and it's like a consistent thing, then I will feel very content. How about that?
Awesome, man.
But as of now, when I'm home, yeah, of course, I'm always picking up the guitar and I'm always recording things and working on stuff. That's just great. Where's it going to? Who knows?
Travis, Bam Bam, thank you so much for just your generosity. I know it's crazy. You got kids. This is your time off. So I really want to thank you for giving us a few minutes here. And good luck with all things Coheed, all things personal life, too.
All right, man. Well, it's good talking to you guys, too.
Travis, you're the best. And I can't wait till you guys come back to New York again or Jersey, either one. So.
Well, I'm living close enough, and honestly, I hope you have a great show tomorrow night.
It'll be all right.
Drop me a line next time you're playing in the area, please.
Absolutely, man.
Awesome.
Thanks so much, and we really do appreciate it. Have fun with your son.
Take care, Travis.
Thank you. Talk to you soon.
Take care, brother. Awesome, awesome, awesome. Humble dude, man.
Yeah. No. I have a project coming up named after the room I did it in, so look forward to Mom's Basement Comedy.
I don't even say sitting on the toilet again. But really,
that's the follow-up album.
Really humble dude. I feel like if I was going on tour to Europe next week, I'd be like, I'm not talking to anybody.
Yeah. Yes, next question.
What do you want? Like, you don't understand. The album they're playing is like really intricate and like very, it's like an hour and 40 minutes long straight through, and playing, you know,
it seems like very precise and
super precise.
You can't really like go off on a tangent.
Yeah, super technical. Like it's like I see the mon. I'm like, oh god, how do these guys do this like 6-7 nights in a row? Like it's really physically demanding, you know. But just an awesome interview. It's so cool to have both of them on and like, you know, hear similar things, but you also hear different perspectives, you know, like on the same thing.
Hearing the personalities with different stories.
But, yeah, man, I think on that, I'll just tell you one quick story I found funny. I got yelled at the other day by my girlfriend.
That's not unusual.
Yeah, no, that's not unusual.
For her birthday, she got, you can't see it from here, but she got this thing called the Snack Man. It's like a little, you put like snacks in it, and like you put your hand on her, and like automatically dispenses it.
So kind of like that alcohol soap. It's kind of the same thing, except you get bubble gum.
Yeah, kind of. But like it'll give you like, you know, like we had like trail mix in there the other day.
Oh, okay.
And I'm cooking, and I'm just eating. I'm eating, and I'm like getting a kick out of like you know, like spits it out, like oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And like she filled it up with, I guess, some Whole Foods. You know, trail mix is expensive. If you ever
$18 a bag kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I'm just noshing the whole time. And
you're cooking, like,
mom. There's one little thing left. She comes home, and she's like.
Half a pistachio comes out.
You ate everything in my snack, man. Like my snack. I'm like, did you just yell at me seriously and use the word snack, man? Like in a sentence. So it's been this running joke. I'm like, have you seen my snack, man? Can I bring my snack, man, with me? But it's, yeah, I got yelled at for eating out of too much of the snack, man.
But, it'd been great if you put like paper clips in there or something like that. You were panicking. Like, oh, filler. We got no carrot sticks. They're not going to work.
I just put like filler in there, like when you drink your dad's like liquor cabinet and you fill it back with water. Like those shipping peanuts, those packing.
But this tastes weird.
But yeah, so that was something I never imagined getting yelled at for. But I think let's get out of here, man.
Yeah,
let's get out of here. Nice.
I know you have to get out of here, but I digress.
You got to go to the library.
Uh-huh.
But is the library still like? Do a lot of people go there?
It's happening.
And like read. Like a lot, do you see a lot of people just chilling in there, like Barnes and Noble?
I usually see about 10 or 12 people there. Most of them are like,
Are you starting to become like a library?
The gang.
Hey, Don, you know, have the kids.
So,
Jerry, looking good today. Diet's working.
Look at you reading that nonfiction again.
That's so Jerry. That's so Jerry.
He hates fiction, Jerry.
Oh, there's Karen, the slot by the Dewey Decimal cards, as always. Mm-hmm. So, Karen.
You want my number?
But, I don't know, I have anything to promote besides us.
Let's just end on that.
Yeah, I want to promote us. Verbal Shenanigans. We've had a lot of really cool guests this year. It's absolutely like unbelievable some of the people we got to talk to. Like today I talked to two members of my this episode we talked to two members of my favorite band. A couple months ago, talked to Riley Breckenridge from another one of my favorite bands, and then Victor the other day, and the Seagulls last week.
Eric Levine, mm-hmm. Dave Anderchuk, Chris Ballou.
It's been a ridiculous year. Like, please go back if this is your first time hearing it. Go back and just check out the page and look at some of the episodes we had, and subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher or the Laughable app. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of ways you can listen to it. You're also not dumb. You can Google Verbal Shenanigans and tons of things will pop up. But we've done so many different things with musicians, actors.
Kirby Chambliss.
G-Love. Pilots, G-Love, and Captain Wild Bill from Deadliest Catch. Mm-hmm. Like, it's been a really hot – since January, it's been a super hot year for us. Some of these episodes, we've had two great guests on per episode. But and subscribe on Instagram at Verbal Shenanigans and Twitter at VS Comedy. The best thing you can do is share it with your friends and family.
And people you hate, too.
Yeah, send it to them. Say, these guys suck.
Yeah, just punch them, tie them down, and make them listen. Yeah,
it's like those glitter bombs you can send to people.
God damn it!
I don't want to hear them talk about Dukes of Hazzard again. But anyway, let's get out of here. Life is funny, people laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back.